Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Welcome to Brain Injury Radio and Recovery Now. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and survivors share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. Tune in, stop in, and call in. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. The first part of our show is a featured guest, and the second half is open mic and some great indie music, sure to inspire. So, we are on the eve of our fourth anniversary. 4 years, Brain Injury Radio has been circling the globe to all 50 states, 36 countries. What do we have? Close to 1,000 shows now, I think. 900 and something. I've been known to exaggerate a little. Could be the Italian or the Irish. But a whole bunch of shows over a period of 4 years' time. And I think next week, I think it's the 15th, maybe? In any case, we'll be celebrating next week our anniversary and have some former hosts, as well as I think Craig's got some tricks planned for some of us current hosts. So I may be signed in as guest instead of myself. As most of you know, I do my interview first, and then at the conclusion of the interview, we have a little time left for question and answer, but because of my own brain injury, I don't like to get off track and open the mics and interrupt, but I do encourage you to call in and listen 424-243-9540 or toll-free 855-473-3711 in the United States and outside the U.S. 202-559-7907. And when the time for question and answer comes, I will give you a heads up, no pun intended, and you hit one, and that will let me know that you have a question. I know that a lot of you have been really excited tonight because we've come to have a regular contributor, Dr. Maria Romanis, and I have got so much positive feedback about Maria. And every time she's been on, she's talked about her beloved mentor, and he's going to be joining us tonight. So the combination of the two and the topic, Les Paul and I were having kind of a wrestling match about what the topic should be, and since this is my show, I won. And so we're going to be talking about catastrophic reactions, which I've always called emotion regulation problems, and wow, I don't know where figuring out that answer just came from, Maria, but she's been trying to retrain me in this terminology. As most of you know, Maria is a staff pathologist at the VA hospital in Kansas City, where she practices general surgical pathology and is fellowship trained in cytopathology. She enjoys teaching and training pathology residents. Her professional and personal life was limited by a severe traumatic brain injury she suffered during a rollover car accident in 1984 when she was 18 years old. Although she does not have an outwardly obvious disability, her cognitive impairments were causing her to have to work ridiculous hours to get her job done. In April-May of 2013, Maria went through an 8-week program of intensive holistic cognitive rehabilitation, otherwise known as HCR, that trained her to become her own self-therapist. She learned exactly what was wrong with her brain and how she could deliberately use her conscious mind to prevent her impairments from causing disabled functioning. Maria is now functioning better than she has in her whole adult life. She's no longer spending long hours at work and has energy and time to spare for herself, her family, and other relationships. She's gone from merely existing and barely surviving to recovering and thriving. It's not an exaggeration to say that HCR enabled her to take her life back, although it is now considered standard practice, it's not widely available. It took 29 years for Maria to find this help, and she came upon Dr. Larry Schutz. Correct me on that too. PhD, ABPP, who is a neuropsychologist with more than 30 years of experience in brain injury rehabilitation. He trained with the founders of Intensive Holistic Cognitive Rehabilitation, no coincidence there, and has since refined the methodology to develop an advanced 8-week program, Self-Therapy for Adaptive Recovery, or STAR. He is the author of the books Head Injury Recovery in Real Life and Rehabilitation of the Shaken Soldier Syndrome. Dr. Schutz founded GiveBack, a nonprofit organization that provides education and support so that survivors can learn how to become recoverers. He has written 2 free manuals that can be accessed via the GiveBack websites at givebackorlando.com and givebackla.com. The first is for survivors titled Self-Therapy for Traumatic Brain Injury, Teaching Yourself to Prevent Brain-Injured Moments. The second is for family members and friends called Helping Your Family to Recover from Brain Injury. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Maria and Dr. Larry to the show. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing well. And I would like to introduce Larry. I introduced him to a group of lawyers last week, and I'll tell you a little bit of what I told them. I told them that he is a fellow of the National Academy of Neuropsychology. He's also a diplomat of the American College of Rehabilitation Psychology. So he has both credentials. And there are less than 10 individuals on this planet that have both credentials. So, so he is a special person, and I'm really excited that he can be with us today.
So, I am too. I am too. How are you doing tonight, Larry?
I'm doing great, Kim. I've really been looking forward to appearing on your show. I've enjoyed listening to previous shows where Maria was your discussant. And you pronounced everything dead on target.
Oh, wow. Phew. No catastrophic reaction right now, then. One of the things, when Maria's been on, as you know, then each time, we've talked about things that she learned from you, and she has talked about your manuals. Again, I'm going to type that in the chat room for the folks in a moment, but the Orlando one was the easier one, right, Maria? The givebackorlando.com? Was there a reason?
Here to find the PDF easier so that you can download it. It can be more easily read on the LA site, but if you want to download it and have it on your desktop, it's easier to get it from the Give Back Orlando. You just go to the website and you go to the tab that says Resources, and under the tab Resources, you'll find the PDFs for the manuals that can be downloaded. And again, free. They were my first introduction to Dr. Schutz.
Super, super. And I got those in the chat room for everybody, so we'll repeat those again a little bit later in this show. But you know the topics that we've discussed before, and you might have picked up that I feel like I stepped into the twilight zone. We had what I call the winter that wouldn't let go. And when it finally did and spring came late, we got in the process of moving. And as I sit here today, it feels like I stepped into the twilight zone and missed spring and summer and looked up and we're on September already. And it was like, where did all of the time go? And a couple of the nights that Maria was on, I was wound tighter than what clock is that? The old saying, wound tighter than a 12-day clock, whatever. Pretty uptight. And one of the things that I have observed being a host here, and then I recognized it in myself, often like Maria, who went 29 years without really having validation, identification, the proper kinds of help, I went 17. And I say tongue-in-cheek that it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to be my first other brain injury survivors. And one of the things I heard over and over from both survivors and caregivers that hit me, mirrored me, was the fact that many of us can tend to have emotion regulation problems or react more intensely than a situation might warrant, particularly in what I've started calling, before I had been around any survivors or professionals who really knew what I was talking about, full basket syndrome, too many new things coming at me at once, or just too many things coming at me at once. And I look back over the last several months, and in the last several months, I have reacted with catastrophic intensity more than in the last decade, as far as incidences in small clusters. And so I've really had to draw upon every tool that has availed me from every type of recovery I've been involved with over the years. And I thought that tonight that would be a good topic to talk about, because I can always use more tools, obviously, or I wouldn't have been struggling so much with it the last 6 months. But I also hear a lot about this, as I said, from callers to the show and guests who talk about their story. It's no surprise that a lot of us with brain injury have had relationship problems, be that interpersonal, at work, out on the street, and that this is rather in the top 10 hallmark symptoms of our brain injury. Would you agree with that, Dr. Larry?
Yeah. The people that I've been working with over the last about 25 years have a standing homework assignment. Every time they come in for therapy as outpatients, they need to bring a form filled out to show some kind of a problem they ran into in day-to-day life and how they tried to solve it. And this is the number one source of those problems. People report more difficulty with catastrophic reactions than any other symptom.
Now, how would you, I gave my two cents of how I would describe a catastrophic reaction in my life. How would you describe it among brain injury survivors overall? Am I fairly close, or can you just maybe explain what we're talking about? A couple of people were asking me on Facebook pages, did I mean this, did I mean that? And so you're the man who wrote the book. How would you describe it?
Well, actually, I like how you described it, Kim. I think it's very apt. The way that I would describe it is a catastrophic reaction is a panic attack in which the bottom drops out cognitively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When a person is overwhelmed, overloaded, surprised, particularly surprised, when they're asked a question and they think they can answer it until they open their mouth and start trying to answer it, and then they discover that they don't know what the answer is. Those kinds of shocks to the system can trigger a panic. And once the panic begins to grow, it literally takes away your best cognitive abilities. So I have had people who've had catastrophic reactions who cannot tell you where they live. They cannot tell you the name of their spouse. They can't tell you where they went to high school. In the midst of the catastrophic reaction, and after it passes, they have no trouble in answering any of those questions.
Okay,
so a catastrophic reaction steals away what you know temporarily and leaves
right.
you at a complete loss for words, feeling intimidated.
I'm seldom at a loss for words, but yes, I have trouble getting stopped dead in my tracks sometimes to find the right ones. I try to be appropriate, but in my case, I was getting angry. And a lot of times it was about the frustration of not being able to handle myself in a way that I have grown accustomed to in the last few years, much more emotional. And it was either going to lend itself to bursting into tears, which it did a few times, or just being downright witchy mad. And
and then once you blow your stack and you're letting them have it, all of a sudden it occurs to you that you've forgotten what the subject of discussion was in the first place.
Right, and then I have to go lay down.
Yes. Because it takes everything out of your system.
Yeah, it's like it totally exhausts me, and then I have to go lay down in a really dark, quiet place and assimilate again, get my pieces back together. It's almost like taking a box, a jigsaw puzzle box, and dumping it upside down and having the pieces scatter and kind of frantically trying to pull them all back in, you know, get them on the table and find some kind of order. You know, I think that's kind of the way that I relate to that, is just the order being taken away. And I think, you know, one of my own character descriptors, however you'd like to call it, is control. And so somebody like me is going to, you know, when I go blank and get that frustration and either that emotional upset, teary or angry, then it just accelerates that blank that you're talking about, just pulling the blank and not being able to find the words or be able to conduct myself the way that I knew a minute ago in my mind I wanted to. Another way that I describe this is I had to make up my own words because I didn't have a Dr. Larry when I was coming up through the process, but I call it something shiny. You know, something gets my attention, I'm on my attention, I'm focused, I'm on the track, and then that shoelace breaks or that straw that breaks the camel's back, and boom, it's like something shiny over here in my peripheral, and it just pulls me off the track. And it's hard to know how to respond to that. Now, what kind of triggers have you found are common that will bring us to this place?
I think the trigger that I have seen most often, and that is of real concern to me, is when a person during a conversation tries to think of the name of somebody or tries to think of a fact or an experience that they've had, and all of a sudden they can't find the memory.
Mm-hmm.
And they've come to the point in the conversation where they need to say something and they cannot figure out what on earth to say. But more than anything else, they're shocked that the information that they thought was right at their fingertips isn't there.
Yeah.
And it's that when you turn to yourself and ask yourself to do something and you suddenly discover, much to your surprise, that you just can't do it at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that induces the initial panic. Then,
right.
When people notice how much they've been disturbed and flustered and upset, it increases their panic. And as the panic increases, they get more tongue-tied, and oftentimes they get more impulsive as well. And sometimes they'll chew somebody's head off based on that impulsivity. But they can't rescue themselves. They can't make something good come out of the situation. So it just gets more and more embarrassing and frustrating and pressureful.
Right. And it's not just the, you know, one of the things we, in the top 10, is short-term memory issues. But I've noticed that it's not only that, but the longer-term memory issues and the circumstance you're talking about that can leave me too, and that's even more frustrating because I'm pretty used to having those intact. I can sing every word to songs I heard when I was 13, 14, 15 years old, but if you ask me what I had for lunch today, I may struggle in remembering. Now, I'm used to living that way, but it is much more challenging and, like you said, kind of pulls the old tablecloth of life out from under your feet when it happens on something you know. You know, I don't have problems with my long-term memory. Dang it. You know, I should be able to just pull this right up out of the air. It's my short-term memory, not my long-term memory. And all of a sudden then I feel like scrambled egg brain, you know, when you can't find either part of that memory. And yes, you know, those are times that admittedly don't bring out the best in me. Now, I
frustrating and shocking.
Yes, it's very shocking, and it's also, you know, something that is saddening and depressing, because I find in survivors, myself included, that I try not to should on myself or anyone else. That was back on, you know, therapy couch 101, not to do that kind of stuff. But there is an expectation that when you've worked really hard with tools of recovery, that things like that aren't going to happen to that extreme. When I explain my path of recovery from a few different things, it's been that I'm a person of extremes, and my whole life is dedicated to working my way back to the middle, working my way back to balance, working my way back to manageability. And so it's an extra hard blow when you're not new anymore, because you can kind of write some of that off with new and, you know, haven't been to this rodeo before. But when you have and you've been around a moment and it's been a long time since one of those things have come up, and then they come up rapid fire, because one of the things I think you were alluding to is an escalation that happens. It's almost like we're chasing our tail. It starts in one place and then it builds and escalates, and then we're chasing our tail, and then suddenly we're powerless and unmanageable. And that's a really tough spot to be in, grasping at straws without, especially when the recovery tool is the thing you can't think of. When you said that about not being able to rescue yourself, I thought of something my husband said to me over the summer, and he wasn't around when I had my brain injury. He just knows me the way he met me. And he pulled me aside one day after several episodes during a week, and he told me he was sincerely very worried about me because my reactions were just so intense and I was forgetting a lot more than I usually forget, and kind of line listed some things that he observed. Well, of course, that made me feel really self-conscious because a lot of us, especially that look normal and talk normal and don't have as easy of a tell as some people, you know, can hide behind that sometimes. And so it's like getting caught with your hands in the cookie jar when somebody calls you on it. And so when Maria was on last time and talked about catastrophic responses, I forget what it was that Les wanted to talk about. We'll find out, and if he can remember what it was, maybe talk about that last time. But I said, no, I really want to talk about this because it's something that I'm living right now. And frankly, I haven't had these problems for quite a while, or at least they've been enough distance in between that I've had chance to recover and pull myself together and haven't had anybody tell me they were concerned, you know, about me, or taken as many timeouts, you know, as I felt that I needed to practice damage control with relationships, with those reactions. And so I'm glad that he did mention it because obviously I was in this cycle that I wasn't even recognizing was going on until it was called to my attention. And then I felt sheepish and embarrassed and frankly at a loss because I didn't know how to make it stop until all these situations stopped that were going on, until the guys renovating the house went away, until my dad was out of rehab, and you know, until my mom had a couple of surgeries, until a couple of catastrophic things happened in our new home within 24 hours of moving in. I just was really felt like I got thrown off the ship and nobody sent me a life raft. And so I very interested in this topic. And Maria, how did you come? What kind of behaviors were you exhibiting or things were you noticing? And at what point along your path that you recognized this fact, phenomena, issue?
Well, let me start by addressing what's going on with you, okay? But before I forget, you had, I mean, we've talked about this before. You had, mm-hmm. when a person with brain injury tends to do well in situations that they are accustomed to, okay, in situations, in places, in tasks that they are accustomed to, when you add something new to the situation, and we talked about this with brain injured moments, okay? When you add something new to the situation, that is when the automatic responses don't do, okay? And the problem is, with brain injury, we have less of an ability, well, you know, it's kind of a disconnection between our executive functioning, which normally would figure out what to do in a new situation, okay, automatically without you even thinking about it. But with a person with brain injury, that doesn't happen automatically.
And the more active your life, the more responsibilities you take on, the more you put yourself out there, and the more catastrophic reactions you're going to experience.
You had so much on your plate. You had moving. You had those two major catastrophes happen. You had your father in the hospital. You had the, like you said, with your mother and the... Your grandmother also, she was ill too, if I remember
correctly. Yeah, she's in hospice, but I got to tell you, at 94 years old and now in hospice for several months, I think she was doing better than I was there for a couple of months. She's a tough bird still.
But like you said, you were
us.
Out of your routine. You had gone into the, you felt like you were doing better for a long period of time, but you add all these stressors and, you know, stressors and also all the new, all these new situations that are not part of your normal routine, you are going to have brain-injured moments, okay? We talked about that before. But in reaction to those brain-injured moments, you're having catastrophic reactions. You're like, why is this happening? Why can't I figure this out? You know, that's sort of setting you up for these catastrophic reactions. So in my mind, the brain-injured, the newness, the stress of everything, okay, one after another, causing the brain-injured moments, you know, set off this series of catastrophic reactions as well. And you dealt with it really well. Part of what we'll be talking about tonight is how you deal with the catastrophic reactions. And one of those things is to step back and do we want to go there yet?
Well, let me go at it in a little bit different way. I know where you're going.
Okay.
Kim, let me put the shoe on the other foot. Suppose you're interviewing Maria, and suddenly she has a catastrophic reaction, and she stops dead in mid-sentence, and she's stumbling, and she can't think of what to say. Would you say, shame on you?
No.
How would you react to her?
I'd ask her if she was all right.
In the middle of your show, how would you react?
I'd ask her if she's all right and if there's anything I could do to help her. But, you know, in my case,
okay,
again,
that is the way you must treat yourself when you're having one. You cannot succumb to shame any more than you would shame someone you care about who's having one. The first thing you have to do is stop and look at the situation and accept what's going on and accept it in an understanding way. Because if you beat yourself up, you'll just get a much bigger catastrophic reaction.
Well, and I've got to say that, frankly, in the traditional medical model, I went from a mom and pop shrink who I loved to death, who understood me really well, and I had the admiration, have the admiration for him, now retired, that Maria has for you. And when he retired, I went to corporate shrinkery. And I went in the middle of this, and I said, which I've never said when I've gone there, I kind of go through the paces, and I said, I need help. And I don't say that unless I really need help, okay? So they hadn't been accustomed to hearing this from me, and I said, I'm losing it. I really need help. And his solution was going to be to up-med me, and I said, no, that isn't going to help me. You know, that is going to hurt me. I need a different kind of help, and apparently you're not going to be able to give that to me. So let's just leave this topic. And I think our 15 minutes is about up, and I'm going to go back out there in the world and learn from my guests. No, I didn't say that. But, you know, I think too many times we get in these situations and enter a traditional medical model where maybe they don't specialize in brain injury or don't know as much, have as many patients, clients that have a brain injury. And too often the answer is to pelt another pill at it or to increase a dosage. And I don't know, I just, not my first time at this rodeo, and that is just not the answer for me. You know, what the answer for me was a lot of the time, as I said, was I needed to extract myself from the situation, and go to a dark, quiet place, breathe.
Yes, that's one of
the first things I forget is breathing. You know, oh God, I've been holding my breath for a week and a half, for God's sake, you know. And
that's the easiest way to increase your freaking out, by holding your breath. Yes, you've got to get that slow breathing back.
Right, but I don't even know it. I think a lot of us don't even know it when we're doing it.
That's right.
You know? So, did you guys have a curriculum you wanted to go by on this topic like you normally do, Maria?
I do, actually. Do you want me to go through it?
Yes, please. And both of you, I think I've talked enough. I just kind of set up the situation a little bit in my sharing my own experience in this, kind of not only ratting on myself, but things that I've heard from other people who've called in the show and challenges they have. A lot of times it's maybe about breaking up a long-term relationship or losing a job and finding out that it isn't going to be so easy or possible to get a new one, or a death in the family, or like we said, just too many things coming all at once that put us in this situation, and we're really left with not a lot of ready solution, at least, you know, depending on what kind of medical treatment we're getting. Too often it's by over-medicating us, and that's not a long-term solution. That's a short-term band-aid that's going to probably cause side effects in a lot of us that aren't going to help the initial problem and are going to exacerbate the initial problem by adding additional problems to the pile, which is just going to make this whole subject we're talking about even worse.
Kim, I think that your description of how you try to handle catastrophic reactions is so right down the pipe. It's absolutely accurate clinical information, and it really validates your method of learning about brain injury that you talked about during the introduction to the show today.
I mean, I've told Larry, Kim, that I've been impressed by you and what you've put together along the way. I mean, you have a great understanding of this topic, and yet, you know, you've received no formal training, okay? And so
right.
What we hope today is to kind of add to that and fill in some of the holes. How's that?
One thing I would like to tell you guys, just for a little clarity's sake, and I don't say it on the program, so I know sometimes it might sound like I'm contradicting myself, I have never had treatment for my brain injury from the very beginning. They saved my life, released me to the universe, never suggested that I get any kind of therapy, check in with a neurologist. It was, we saved your life, you're clipped, you're looking good, you're walking, you're talking, goodbye. Not sent out with a manual for me or my loved ones and friends. However, at that point in 1995, I had spent 7 years, now 27 years in about a month and a half, in a 12-step program. I also spent 3 years going through DBT, dialectic behavior therapy, and I'm a lifer on the shrink couch.
Realization that you have to take responsibility for the problems that have been caused by your medical condition, and you have to do something about it.
Yes.
And that is so evident in the way that you're discussing this. That's the road out. You have to assume responsibility. If you're having catastrophic reactions, you need to learn about them. You need to understand
right.
how they work, and you need to follow up with other people and find out how they handle them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it forced me to come out to other places like the DBT and working double time, you know, in the other program. It doesn't take a mental giant, you know, 12-step where it started has branched out to 179 other conditions. And so the fundamental premise of those four A's I talk about awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation are something that have been ingrained with me for over a quarter of a century. But when it comes to where my brain injury factors in, all I can try to do is to do my best with the tools that I've been given, but often come up at a loss when it comes to things like this that have to do with the brain injury, because it doesn't have to do with, well, sometimes it still has to do with PTSD and brain injury, but it doesn't have to do with chemical abuse or domestic abuse or assault or any of the things that took me to a places to learn these tools, because I just wasn't getting the help that I needed, and it was dangerous. And a lot of us, another thing I've heard on the show a lot, and I include myself in this, is that a lot of us found ourselves at a precipice, a stepping off place where, okay, the traditional medical model hasn't helped me. I'm at a loss. I'm desperate. And so there's a couple choices here too, probably, and that's quit or doggedly go out to other places outside the box and try to find these answers and these people that aren't as readily found and get those answers and get that help and not quit before the miracle happens, because I know that there's people out there that have these tools. Just because I haven't found them yet in a lot of cases is not a time for me to quit and make a permanent solution to what very well could be a temporary problem if I'm given the right tools to help me cope.
And that is exactly the situation when it comes to catastrophic reaction. There is a set of things you can do to control catastrophic reactions. There's another set of things that you can do to prevent them. This is one of the problems that you have the most power over, potentially, once you learn what goes into the bag of tricks. For which,
great,
I turn to Maria.
Yes, please. All right, now I'm going to turn it over to both of you. So great.
Okay. Well, when I was going through the program in California, Larry had me prepare a talk every week to give to a give-back group regarding whatever I was learning that week. So the basis, I have a PowerPoint like I usually do, and I can send it to you. I don't have access to the Internet right now, but I can send it to you probably tomorrow. About catastrophic reactions, strategies for feeling overwhelmed and brain injury. So I'm going to start from the beginning, and we're going to, I think we've already discussed some of it, and we'll go through it quickly. So with brain injury, and it affects emotional control, okay? And one of the major ways it affects it is you develop an intolerance of anxiety or tension, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, your frustration level, the threshold at which a brain injured person becomes frustrated, is extremely low. I know it is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as the environmental stimulation increases, as you have more things coming at you, just like you said, the full basket syndrome, emotional control decreases.
And there's a deterioration point, and that's much lower.
Yes. Okay. And so other things that will kind of affect it are prolonged stress, especially if it's cumulative over time, and also if you have a lot of changes, like we talked about what's happening with you this summer.
And, of course, if you're involved in a lifestyle that's stressful, then you're also likely to not get enough sleep, and the lack of sleep really contributes to your vulnerability to these reactions.
Yeah, the best thing you
yes.
can do for yourself. I have to learn that over and over again, unfortunately.
Me
the
too.
Best my recovery is to get the sleep that I need. And yet, when it comes time to go to sleep, so often it doesn't seem so important at that moment. Whatever it is I'm doing at that moment seems more important. so.
Maria, I have a wacky idea.
What's that?
Can we try this?
Try what?
Maria was observing catastrophic reactions in my dog.
Yes, she did.
And she noticed today she had not seen Foxy Lady for
10 months.
Yeah, close to a year. And she noticed that Foxy Lady had chilled out and that she wasn't freaking out anymore. And that is a doggy version of a catastrophic reaction.
Yes, because the dog had been abused, right?
Yeah.
The dog had been abused. And so when Larry first got Foxy Lady, it was actually during my program, she was very uptight, very wound. And, you know, now she just seems so relaxed and so calm and so, you know, because he has put a lot of time into loving her, even when she doesn't ask for it, right?
That's right.
Okay. So anyway, should we go on?
Yes.
Okay, so catastrophic reaction is acute and it's intense. It's triggered by surprise, unexpected pressure or failure, or like a brain injured moment. It is like an anxiety attack or a panic attack, but the way it differs from panic attacks in ordinary people is that it has major cognitive effects. Basically, you can lose access to working memory and even long-term memory, and then you often have impulsiveness, and then it can be very, very upsetting. You can act in ways that are not like yourself, okay? Because at that moment, it's like your control system is completely offline. And so your lizard brain, right? Your lizard brain,
right.
the flight, fight, and also the flight, fight, fright, all of that takes over. You have no control over that when you are in the middle of a catastrophic reaction, am I right?
You are in a state of extreme threat.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
It's like a psychic threat.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'm kind of trying to find my notes here. Okay. So it's extremely upsetting, and often people with brain injury will abandon further involvement in the activity that provoked it. So what you tend to have are people that stay in their homes, don't try to make new relationships, okay? They lose the old ones, okay? And so they end up living very isolated and very limited lives due to their feeling that they need to avoid these catastrophic reactions. Okay, and so that is one reason why we need to learn to manage them, okay? The origin of the term catastrophic reaction was by Dr. Goldstein.
Kurt Goldstein.
Dr. Kurt Goldstein, and he was a physician?
He was a psychiatrist and neurologist in Germany between the two world wars.
And he was the first doctor, and actually one of the few doctors ever, to systematically study the chronic effects of a brain injury, right?
Yes.
And he described, he used the term catastrophic reaction to describe a behavioral state, I'm reading this, okay, to describe a behavioral state exhibited by brain-injured patients when they fail in their efforts to perform a task. In this state, which he termed the catastrophic reaction, the patient may appear dazed, become agitated, change color, start to fumble, become unfriendly, evasive, or even aggressive. So that kind of covers the whole gamut of some of the,
mm-hmm.
of some of the reactions
yep.
we talked about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, like at the New York University Rusk Institute, they like to use the term emotional flooding, where
wow.
all of your senses basically are flooded by this emotion, and you cannot make sense of doing it. You know, you have, like, again, this excessive environmental stimulation, too many things coming at you at once. You know, these catastrophic reactions can happen numerous times daily, especially when you are in new situations like you were, and it can make you forget the things that you normally know, and it can mess up any task, any skill, any time, and in any situation. So the prognosis, yes? Yes, Kim?
The emotional flooding. What a powerful, descriptive, on-target way to put it.
Yes. So catastrophic reaction, emotional flooding, overwhelm, whatever term you use.
Freak out.
Freak out, yeah, freaking out. Okay, losing it.
And then that highly medical term.
I mean,
because everybody knows what it means to freak out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we use the term catastrophic reaction in honor of Kurt Goldstein because he's the first one to really to observe it and describe it, okay? So anyway, if we don't learn to control or to get some management of our catastrophic reactions, again, the prognosis is that the survivor will abandon future involvement in the activity that provoked it. They will avoid change. They will seek familiar environments and situations. And if extreme, can result in living a very empty life, okay? Watching TV, you know, a very safe life. So anyway, I'm going through the PowerPoints a little bit disjointed. So situations prone to overwhelm, we've already discussed too much coming too fast, a complex task requiring too much information, lack of preparation for a hard task. You thought it was easy, but it ends up being harder than you thought, and you're surprised by it. Multitasking, another situation is prone to overwhelm, and parenting, which is where I really started having consistent overwhelm. Okay, you know, when the kids were little, it was fine, but when the conflict started, when they started asking why and challenging every little thing, that's when I started losing it. So. And that's when I lost my credibility with them for a while, okay?
When you had four teenagers, didn't you, at the same time?
Boys, three sons. Yeah, three teenagers, three sons.
Three boys, okay.
Three,
yeah.
So the best medicine for catastrophic reactions is prevention, okay? So one way we can prevent catastrophic reactions is situational awareness, kind of paying attention to what is going on around us, and thinking about how it could affect us. Okay, so I was planning on being here in Florida through Saturday, okay? But we had my cousin's wife died, okay? And the funeral's on Saturday. And I was like, well, I can't go. And actually, this cousin moved away when I was still a very little girl. He's quite a bit older than me, and I only met his wife once. But she was a beautiful woman, okay? But really, I did not feel the emotional connection to really feel like I had to be there. But the thing is, his mother, my aunt, you know, it seemed to mean a whole lot to her that my father, her brother, and my mom and I be there, that all the family come. And so, you know, here I am having to, you know, change the ticket. Okay, fortunately I got travel protection, but change the ticket, you know, change all my plans. Tonight doing this interview, and then after this interview I've got to drive an hour to the hotel, okay, because both Larry and I only have cell phones. So we had to do it in the doctor's office that we work with on his speakerphone. And so we don't have access to that, you know, except an hour away from where my hotel is. So tonight, you know, here in Florida, I've got, you know, I need to finish up in another half an hour or so that I can leave here at 11:30, be at the hotel 12:30, try to be in bed by 1:00. I did most of my packing this morning, okay, because I did anticipate that. Tomorrow morning, get up, drive to Tampa, which is more than an hour away, and maybe in traffic it'll be more like 2 hours, and then be at the airport in time, and then get to Kansas City. So leaving Tampa at 1:30, getting to Kansas City at 5:30, my mother's picking me up, and then trying to get on the road, because from Kansas City to Atlanta, it's according to MapQuest, 12 hours. But when I've done it before, it's 13 or 14. So I've got to take it. I have my bags packed, so I don't have to repack. But I have to pick up my mom and dad, okay, and get on the road either Thursday night, okay. so we can break up the trip a little bit. You know, try to get 3 hours in tomorrow night, then drive the rest of the way to Atlanta on Friday. Saturday,
jeez,
the funeral.
Weird.
Sunday to drive back. And actually, I called my boss yesterday and said, you know, I really can't come to work on Monday. I really need at least 2 days to drive back, okay? Because
yeah.
of the situational awareness, okay?
So.
Right.
So, okay, your A word, adaptation. Maria,
mm-hmm.
what's the first thing you need to do to adapt to this complicated situation?
I need to plan.
Even before that?
Breathe.
Good. Step one, you need to expect
to be
under pressure.
Exactly. Expect it, okay? Expect it and then plan it carefully, okay? Like even this morning before I came out to where we are now is Port Charlotte. I was working today with Dr. Tucci, and today he was in Port Charlotte, an hour away from Sarasota, and I knew I wouldn't have time to go back. And I was like, if I wait till tomorrow morning to pack, I'm going to be at risk for being late, and then I would be, you know, stressed out all day. So basically, I was able to think it through and anticipate, kind of make, you know, a series of steps that I needed to follow because. You know, this is ridiculous. And actually, if I had not had this rehab, I wouldn't even attempt this. I would say, nope, can't do. Okay.
Now, the Maria who I started working with a year ago, when the pressure would go up, she would grit her teeth, focus on positive things, and try to plunge ahead and get it done. Now,
mm-hmm.
thank heavens, doesn't do that. Now, she takes a deep breath. She takes her time, she gets her thoughts together, she sets up the circumstances for success.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's you know, one example, okay? So make yourself, so kind of the situational awareness, kind of expect, I'm going to be visiting, or I'm going to be having, I'm going to someone's house for dinner, and there's going to be a new couple there that I don't know, okay? So kind of maybe finding something out about that couple, you know, asking about, you know, what does he do, what does she do, so that you're prepared with some questions or something to talk with them about. Do you see? You know, kind
right.
of thinking ahead, you know, not – because before what I tended to do was to deal with things as they came, okay? Like at
– Yes.
Because that's all my mind could handle, okay? When I was working through the cases on my desk, I'd only see the case on top, okay? I didn't have
yes.
the whole picture in mind, okay? And so, yeah, the situational awareness is a key thing. Making yourself, okay, sorry, Larry.
The worst thing you can do when you start to panic is to become afraid of the panic.
Yeah.
Because then
yeah.
you just keeps getting worse and worse. Every time you think about how panicked you already are, you get more panicked.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So make yourself ready to deal with external disturbance. Recognize if there's a need to deal with internal disturbance. This is what he's talking about. Okay? So learning to recognize these cues before the actual panic sets in. Okay? Because usually there are cues. But with brain injury, we tend not to pay attention to them. But like you said, oh, maybe I'm not breathing. Maybe I need to take some deep breaths, okay? Oh, I'm starting to sweat. Oh, I'm starting to grip my teeth. Oh, I'm starting to clench my fists, okay? Starting to pay attention to the internal cues that you're starting to get overwhelmed before that point of no return comes, okay? And if you're perfectionistic, this is something Larry had to teach me, to back off on the pressure, okay? To keep the pedal off the metal. So like he said, the way I was doing it, my mother used to say, okay, you know, these things that mothers say kind of go in your head. They
yeah.
say, you know,
mm-hmm.
mother would say, attack the work, you know. She would say, when you have a lot of work to do, you need to attack it, okay. And so that would be my approach. But sometimes, you know, in the attack, things would go wrong, and then I would get overwhelmed and, you know, I didn't understand what's happening. And so sometimes attacking the work isn't the way to go about it. You know, it's better to, you know, anyway. So that's the best medicine for catastrophic reactions is to learn to prevent them, okay? And then But the thing is, if you are in the middle of one, okay, how do you deal with it? And you've already given us a pre-lecture on this.
Very nicely. Yes.
Okay. Number one, disengage from the situation, okay? If you can, go to another room, okay?
So another on the list of the worst things you can do, when you're starting to have a catastrophic reaction, trying to keep talking about the subject matter is one of the worst things you could possibly do because it'll just magnify your catastrophic reaction.
Yes.
So you want to stop talking about it.
Yeah, tonight, I was helping Larry move some boxes of some therapy equipment into another office setting, and then I was hungry. I had not eaten a proper meal yet today, all this diet food stuff, you know. And then I was getting hungry, and then I was getting tense. He says, you seem a little bit, you know. I was like, I don't know if I'm hungry or if I'm tired. I don't know what it is. Okay. But then we started talking. We got together. You know, we stopped at, TGI Fridays and got a meal. And then we started talking about a difficult, like, is there a God sort of subject. And I was like, you know, Larry, I really don't want to go there right now. We got this interview in an hour. Okay, for an hour and a half, you know, and I really need not to do this right now. But I was recognizing in myself, although the topic is something that I would be normally excited to talk about, in that moment, what I needed to do was kind of back off and kind of chill. And so that's what we did, right? So number one, when you're having a catastrophic reaction, disengage from the situation. If you can, go to a different room. You know, if you can't be in a different room, like he said, maybe change the subject. Try to kind of
hush up.
Hush up, inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, kind of. Someone described that they're teaching Alzheimer's patients to have some control over their reactions by teaching them to kind of to go to a different place. Okay, kind of. Let whatever it is upsetting them just to wash over them and then like maybe close their eyes, okay, until the situation changes. And then they can open their eyes and deal with it, okay? We didn't talk about this, Larry, okay? But the idea is that you kind of, you know, even if you can't leave the room, you know, try to get rid of the psychic, whatever it is that's, aggravating
well,
it.
Again, so to pull an analogy change from a different life, the freak out in a catastrophic reaction is not too different from what a lot of women go through when they're giving birth for the first time.
Really?
Yeah, because they get overwhelmed with the stimulation and the pain and the fear. It's a really hyper-intense reaction for a lot of people.
Sure.
And I'm an old Lamaze dad,
okay.
And what you help your partner do is do not focus on anything but your breathing,
yes.
And that gives you relief.
Yes, that's true.
Right.
So the other thing is to label it, okay, because at the time a catastrophic reaction is happening, it feels like the world is coming to an end, okay? It feels like you're so stupid that, you know, how could you ever be, it just feels so intense, and it feels like it's something that's going to, kill you, okay? What we need to do is to recognize it and just say, and to label and say, oh, this is just a catastrophic reaction, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because catastrophic reactions end. We know that, right?
Yep.
Right.
Okay, and, and then create an expectation for rapid improvement, okay? By learning about a catastrophic reaction, you know it has a beginning, you know it has an end, and the sooner you get control over it, the sooner it will end, okay? So you create, just say, oh, this is just a catastrophic reaction, okay? Create an expectation for rapid improvement, relax your muscles, and control your breathing, okay? And, you'll be okay again in a few minutes. And with practice, you can be okay even within 15 seconds. With practice, you can learn to get out of a catastrophic reaction in as quickly as 15 seconds. And I don't know that I can do it that quickly, but it certainly is a lot before. I think we talked about this before, Kim, how losing an umbrella would set me into a catastrophic reaction, okay?
Right.
Okay. But, you know, since a few months ago, I lost a little notebook, okay? A notebook that I had things written in that I liked, that I wanted. But this time, I was like, okay, I should have paid attention. I had taken the notebook into a store. I had gone to the pharmacy, and it was a Friday night. Friday nights are bad for me, okay, because I've worked all week. And handed the wrong card to the cashier at the pharmacy. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm tired. I need to be, you know. And I explained that to me. Rather than say, oh, you're stupid, you know, I said, okay, you know, you're tired. You need to, you know, you need to pick. That is why that happened. That's why you handed the card, the wrong card to the person. So I didn't get all upset at myself. But then I didn't take the next step I should have. The next step I should have is say, you know, I've got to be particularly careful about everything tonight. So, you know, I left the pharmacy. I went to my car, drove home, and then I was reaching for my notebook because I had in the notebook what I needed to do that evening. And then I'm looking for the notebook. It's not there. And in the past, I would have beaten myself up, okay? I would have panicked. I would have been like hyperventilating. But you know what? I was like, you know, I must have left it in the cart. You know, I don't remember physically putting it into my car or physically putting it into my purse. It's probably in the shopping cart. So fortunately, Walmart's only 4 blocks away. Went back to Walmart, found the shopping cart, and got my notebook. And this time, I didn't get all upset. You know, I understood what happened and why.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, you had that awareness that it was going on and then kind of played the tape through instead of just jumping off the cliff at the first hint of trouble.
Acceptance. She accepted the fact that she was having a catastrophic reaction, and that allowed her to direct herself to understand it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And she didn't insist on fixing it just like that, which is what her perfectionistic self would have done.
Right, right. A challenge in itself. But, yeah, that was great. Well, wow, what was that a lucky night, or are you just on the accelerated progress plan now, Maria? You were doing good before, but that was excellent, an excellent response. I would have panicked just because of, what was in that notebook, because we come to rely on them, you know, heavily sometimes, and but that was really good that you didn't panic. You understood the situation that you were in. You got calm enough to be able to think the situation through and tracked it back, and it didn't wind up being a catastrophe after all, although you could have made it one.
And so, I think just understanding, you know, just really understanding why I make mistakes, kind of understanding the context, you know, just really helps me to handle the whole thing better, okay? So,
Maria has reached the point of comfort with her catastrophic reactions that we are currently in the process of training her up to give legal depositions.
Yes, and that's kind of scary. Okay, so why am I here in Florida? Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess I will kind of introduce this. You know, I am a pathologist. I've started my training specifically in pathology in 2001. Started working as a pathologist in 2006. I've been a pathologist 8 years, an attending pathologist. I can do this job, and this job is going better than it ever has, okay?
And your ability to do this job is an epic accomplishment.
Yes,
Actually,
my boss said, when I told my boss about this thing that I'm here now for in Florida, which is basically making a career switch to focus on brain injury, okay? And my boss said, He said, Maria, you are a poster child for this sort of rehabilitation. If you can learn this and bring it back to the VA, he said, that would be a wonderful thing. Our veterans need this, okay? So here, you know, so I really did not expect that from him. Okay, but basically,
yeah.
The opportunity is that I would be working with a rehab physician, learning to do, you know, rehab medicine, okay, in an outpatient setting.
Wow.
I would be doing that half-time, and he said that he'll teach me everything I need to know. I don't need to do a rehab residency or anything like that. He says he's been in practice 35 years. He's an MD, PhD as well. Okay, really, really smart, over the top, but also understands brain injury very, very well. And he and Larry, Dr. Schutz, ran brain injury facility rehabs, rehab units back in the 80s and early 90s, okay? And then the insurance companies started really limiting things. And so
yeah.
a lot of, you know, what they were doing back then can no longer be done, okay? So in any case, the opportunity is for me to work with Dr. Tucci half-time and then at the same time work with Dr. Schutz and kind of apprentice with him in learning to do neuropsychological rehabilitation, which no physician in America has been trained to do. Okay?
Wow.
So, okay, so this would be maybe kind of almost doing something no one has ever done before and learning how to take care of a person with brain injury without resorting to drugs or maybe needing, you know, or using drugs as needed, okay? So that's another
right.
thing Dr. Tucci taught me about. When do you use medications? How much do you use them? But again, putting together the neuropsychological rehab, okay, and then putting together the medical side of the rehab together in a, you know. And
so Maria's new career plan is going to put her in a situation to have catastrophic reactions
yes,
every day.
Exactly.
In front of her patients and in front of the attorneys.
Okay, yes, because an important part of this is a lot of Dr. Tucci's patients are actually referred to him by attorneys, okay?
Uh-huh.
Attorneys, people who've had, like, auto accidents or other kinds of accidents. And so
yeah.
then we would need to, you know, do testing to see whether there is evidence of brain injury or if there isn't evidence of brain injury and testify accordingly. Also, insurance companies, you know, if they suspect
yep.
someone is, you know, is feigning a brain injury, you know,
mm-hmm.
we would also be, you know, asked to look to examine them and to present this. And the thing is, part of my salary is going to be dependent on my learning to do these depositions where I'm in the room with the defense lawyer and the plaintiff lawyer. Okay.
And one of the lawyers is bound and determined to upset, embarrass, and disqualify Maria.
You know,
yes.
particularly when they learn that I have a brain injury. Okay.
Right.
I owe myself
right.
have a brain injury. And so it's like, Larry, you know, if they say like question after question after question after question, if they like put four questions all at once, there's no way I'm going to remember, you know, the four questions. And so he says, what do you do? What does a doctor do when a lawyer jams them up? I was like, I don't know. And he says, you know, you get all huffy. And you say, when you are, how did you say it? You say it.
I'll be happy to answer your questions when you calm down enough to pose them to me one at a time.
So basically turning it back on them. Okay.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
Yes.
That's the old showbiz saying, never let him see you sweat. So you meet him square on no matter what's going on inside because you're a credible source, regardless
yes.
of anything else. You
but
know,
Tucci
you're
and,
a highly credible source.
Yeah. So Tucci and Schutz have done thousands of these depositions. Mm-hmm. And so they'll be coaching me and tutoring me. They're like two fathers, you know. They've kind of both taken me under their wings, okay? And I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate to have this opportunity. And it's scary. But, you know, I read something that was written by Richard Branson. He's the one who, you know, is the founder of Virgin Airlines. And I have it on my, this little quote in his picture that I saw somewhere. And it says, if you are presented an amazing opportunity that you're not sure you know how to do, say yes and learn to do it later. So that's kind of been one of my themes, okay? And also, you know, during this past year and a half, you know, like I said, the pathology job is going, you know, much better than it ever has. But the fact is I really don't have time to do much on the side for brain injury. And
right.
I've had to kind of make a decision, you know, am I going to go, I kind of need to do one or the other. And so I'm going to give this, you know, at least a year full on to see if it works for me. And if it doesn't work for me, then maybe what I'll do is do pathology half time and then work with Larry half time, you know, doing the neuropsych rehab with other survivors. But, you know, I mean, there's I've been a pathologist, you know, so long now. I'm not going to lose it all in a year. And in a year, you know,
no.
if I see that it's not for me, I'll step back. But anyway,
well,
yeah,
if it's any consolation, and I'm no expert, but I've gotten to know you a bit, you know, the times that we've talked, and I've got to say that one thing I think is going to help fuel you through this is that this is where your passion is. You're very good at your job and an accomplished pathologist, but your passion has been here for a while.
Yeah. And actually,
you know,
now that, you know, this is changing even pathology. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, before I would, like, you know, be really excited about these new things that occur. But now that I understand that a whole lot could be done for brain injury that's not being done, it's
yes.
like I'm not even interested in learning new stuff about pathology. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I just want to do my job and go home, you know? That's kind of where I'm at. And,
right.
You know,
well, this is the right answer then.
Yeah.
I prayed about this. I actually had a feeling, and I don't know where you're at with that, but, you know, there was a feeling. I've hired a couple of our hosts this way. I tried to get you too, but now I see why you're way too busy to be, and I'm glad it makes me look good when you're a regular contributor here, so never mind. I don't want you to be a host right now, but, you know, I prayed about it because I thought, you know, she's really, I mean, not only are you firsthand, but part of the problem is a lack of understanding from physicians in the traditional medical model because they haven't walked a mile in those shoes, you know? So you're not only an accomplished doctor, scientist, have a passion for brain injury, it's where your interest lies, but you're personally invested as well. And I just had a feeling you were going to be going down this path at some point, you know, at some level. I didn't know exactly what, but I don't know. I think that just kind of emanated from you. So, you know, your current position may not have been overly surprised, but at the same time, they did put that qualifier, go learn it and then come back here, you know, and make us look better, which
yeah.
they need that PR going on right now. So, you know, but that's good. That's good because you go on amenable terms. And like you said, you've been doing that so long. That's in your long-term memory now. And this has really turned you on. I think that you're going to be great at it. And those challenges, you know, with the attorneys, just, you know, think about it. It is all very serious. The subject matter is serious, but it's really the game of chess between the two attorneys. And you're a player who's a qualified player. So any issue will be, I think, something inside yourself and not anything that an attorney is getting over on you, but whether you are able to react or refine responding as opposed to reacting under those new heated circumstances. So you're really blessed to have, I mean, not only do I think you were meant to do this, but the fact that look at the two mentors you land with, there couldn't be any other answer. So I hope that helps your confidence going into it in the times where you might have these catastrophic, you probably will have these catastrophic moments in this new endeavor, but that this is a scenario, I think, that you're meant to work through these issues. You know, that proof is in the pudding crap, you know. I mean, you can read and study this, but it isn't until you're trial by fire, you know, that we actually get practice at learning these things. It's one thing reading them or observing them in others, it's another living through them on our own. And thank God you've got a built-in support system. So does that mean that you get to get out of winter in Kansas and get to be in Florida for winter?
To get Florida medical license, and that can take, it can take, it says on the website 2 to 6 months, okay, but Tucci says sometimes it can take up to a year. So if not, I'm going to still have another winter in Kansas City very likely. So, and it, like I said, it may not happen until, you know, I think it's probably going to be, you know, March, April, May, June, you know, when I get here. So, but anyway.
What Maria is showing you, Kim, is that she has crossed that line in dealing with her own catastrophic reactions to the point where she still has them, but they no longer have any fear for her.
Well, I can't say that. This whole thing about packing up and moving is very daunting, okay? This whole thing is very daunting. But, you know, but it seems like it's destiny, you know, I've had a really difficult life, okay? I mean, a lot of people with brain injury, you know, end up choosing easier lives. Well, I didn't know that I had a brain injury, okay? And you know, my family background, Greek, you know, hardworking ethic, that whatever that all that was, you know, I just kept pushing and pushing and trying harder and harder and didn't realize I was working harder than anybody else, you know. Mm-hmm. But basically, you know, my life is actually very limited. I don't hardly watch TV at all. You know, I have like 10 outfits in my closet for every season. I don't have, you know, I don't go shopping. I buy the same pair of shoes over and over again. You know, I'm very like, you know, I don't have a lot of the things that, you know, I don't take time to do my nails or to spend exorbitant times on my hair, and I'm not going to ever dye my hair. I can't even think. But do you see what I'm saying? My life is not, it takes a lot more time to take care of my brain-injured brain, that a lot of extra stuff in my life gets taken out, okay, like the fun stuff.
It's always a trade-off.
If all of that difficulty I've had in my life could be redeemed, you know what I'm saying? You know, so that's the hope. That's the hope that, you know,
the story of my life will finally make sense.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, congratulations. I'm really happy that you're doing this, and I do understand maybe more than the boys, just because I just moved across town and you're going across country. That by itself, you know, I mean, there's many different layers that you're looking at that you could be fearful of, but, you know, that willingness to take the action, you are ready for that, and I do think that it's destiny. This would be an opportunity that you'd kick yourself in the ass for a lot of years for not trying.
That's exactly what I came to. The conclusion was, you know, Larry first mentioned this to me in April, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was real. I didn't think anybody would hire me to do an area of medicine I had no background in, you know. Didn't think it was for real. I was like, oh, that's nice. Okay. But come June, it was like, you know, I was feeling dead. I felt like all I was doing was pathology.
Actually, Maria and I made a deal.
What's that?
We settled many, many months ago on the idea that if we could work together, we should do it, because I really wanted someone that I could train in everything that I have learned, and I've never had an apprentice who could do it until Maria came along.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an exciting idea, and so Maria wanted to do it in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I'll tell you what. You go see if you can make this happen in Kansas City, and if you can, I will relocate.
Yeah. And the thing is, when I'm working full-time, I would make these appointments to talk to the rehab, the chairman of rehab at KU at the University of Kansas. And he said, you know, I cannot hire a neuropsychologist, but if you have a program, if you develop a program, I will send you patients. It's like, okay, how am I going to develop a program unless I have a place to help? Do you see what I'm saying? And I was like,
yeah.
I would try to make these appointments, like, you know, one appointment a month. And it was taking me away from my work, and I was like, you know, this is never going to happen here. It will take years for it to happen
mm-hmm.
here, if it happens.
At which point I said, since it's not happening in Kansas City, why don't you come to Florida?
And that's what I said, you know, is Tucci for real? Is he really willing to do this? Okay, and that's what I came these 2 weeks to see. You know, to see, you know, whether I feel comfortable with him and how he feels comfortable with me. And, you know, I guess he, like, you know.
That was good planning, too. Very good planning ahead, too, for a big commitment. So that was an excellent use of your tool.
Yeah, I didn't jump into it. My first thing with it was to go right away to Florida, you know. But again,
mm-hmm.
everybody, the vacations were coming up, you know, and yeah, I would have been too stressed to do it back then. And so I was like, you know, mm-hmm. let me wait, go through the summer, you know, give this a lot of thought, and then do it at the end when everybody's back at work and it's not too much pressure at work and all that.
And by the way, Steve Tucci and I are both Socratic method teachers. So what Maria has signed up for is a day after day experience of being handed the microphone. Okay, Maria, take it.
So yes, do you know what that means by Socratic method?
It's
like not learning from a book necessarily, but being taught. Say, what is it? You know, here's a situation. Deal with it. Okay, and then if
right.
you need some help, we'll help you. That sort of thing. So that's it's learning through fire. That sort of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
right.
Anyway, I do need to go because I need to drive back to the hotel so that I can, whatever, go back to Kansas City tomorrow. But anyway, Larry, can you stay any longer, or you need to get off now too?
Well, I can stay a couple of minutes, but then I've got to go too.
Okay.
Well,
anyway,
and I only
I'm going to say goodnight.
A couple minutes worth for you. And you, Maria, yes, get your rest. You've got a couple power-packed days. But thank you so much for coming on tonight and sharing your knowledge, but sharing your good news. I'm really excited for you, and congratulations. And we always appreciate you coming here to Brain Injury Radio and sharing that knowledge with us.
And I can share a whole lot more about catastrophic reactions. I'll have a lot of lawyer stories to tell too.
Yeah.
In
the future.
Anyway,
really anxious.
I'm going to say good night, okay?
Good night. Now, let's
okay,
see.
Okay, you got my 100% of my attention.
Good. I just wanted to make sure. Okay, she's just off that line. Well, I wanted to give you the opportunity because we haven't talked to you before. Tell me a little bit about, and I read some history on this, but for the folks here, again, Larry founded Give Back, and that's what we've been talking about with Maria, this program. But before that, you wrote a couple of books, Head Injury, Recovery in Real Life. Can you tell us a little bit about that book? I found the premise fascinating, but tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, glad to. In rehabilitation, we create an unreal world that operates according to our own special rules. And
yes.
In this unreal world, everything is made simpler and clearer. The normal distractions of life are taken away. And so it makes it initially much easier for people to function. But mm-hmm. how a person can function in the unreal world of rehab doesn't necessarily tell you anything about how they function in real life. And many rehabilitation professionals get caught up so much in their unreal world that they're not concerned enough about preparing their clients for real life, which requires a very different orientation.
Now, absolutely.
This book is the story of 12 extremely special individuals, people who in many ways are like Maria. These are people who had severe brain injuries that affected the essential skills for their job, for their parenting, for their independence. They got hit right where they need to function, and they are all permanently impaired in these essential functions. And yet, these 12 individuals managed to live a life almost completely free of disability. They were able to go back to college or graduate school and earn straight A's. They were able to go back to their managerial job and earn top ratings. One was a young psychotherapist who'd only been a year out of school, and she had a massive frontal lobe damage and literally no self-control initially. And she rebuilt herself so that she could be an effective psychotherapist again. These recoveries are all awesome recoveries. They're just remarkable what these people have done. And in the book, they tell the story of what happened in their life after they left rehabilitation. And they had all been out in the world between 5 and 20 years after leaving rehab. And each one of them explained how he or she took the principles learned in rehabilitation and customized them to that person's life and that person's needs, and how that person built a lifestyle around them. These people live as self-therapists. Every one of them is still a 100% active self-therapist, and they all plan to continue self-therapy till their last day on earth.
So when you talk about rehabilitation, just because we hear a lot of different kinds of that on Brain Injury Radio, you are talking about people that have gone through the STAR program in the course of their rehabilitation, the Self-Therapy for Adaptive Recovery Program. Is that correct?
Well,
these 12 people?
The Head Injury Recovery in Real Life book is about the people who went through the previous version of the program, which was holistic cognitive rehabilitation, but it wasn't the latest version.
But it also wasn't being thrown in a more traditional rehab setting with more traditional therapies and medications. This actually was using
this more holistic approach. I think the lesson that my career has taught me, and I wish it would teach more people, is we have constantly made the mistake of underestimating what survivors are capable of doing. The methodology that I was taught makes the survivor the therapist, and that's not just a cute thing to say. That's really the way it works. The survivors really do learn to become therapists. They study their own deficits in great detail. They mm-hmm. make records about their deficits. They journal about what they've learned, and they discuss it with one another. And by the end of 4 or 5 weeks, it's like you're listening to a neuropsychologist discuss deficit. It is truly an expert understanding of what's gone wrong. And once they've studied what's wrong to that point, kind of in the way that you were talking about studying your own catastrophic reactions, Kim, once they make that commitment to studying themselves, then the transition to being able to fix these problems is an easy one for them.
Right. Well, I think you have to be your own self-advocate, because for one thing, you only get in to see, this is one of the things that I've always thought interesting, you know, you get in to see a traditional therapist every couple weeks or once a month, weekly, whatever it is. But when you're in the middle of crisis, they're not there. And by the time you get to the couch, you know, you've either forgotten about it or you don't remember the velocity with which it hit you at the time. It's like, screw it, the horse is out of the barn. I'm not even going to bring this up. The whole thing exhausted me. This whole show, Recovery Now, is based on the premise that you're going to have tools on you and, in your words, be your own therapist, because if you're not going to help you, nobody else is going to be able to carry you. You know, they might be able to toss you a raft here and there, but if you don't want to drown, you kind of have to make a commitment. And some of the places that, you know, that I've spent recovery talk about, these are suggestions, but really the bottom line is these are requirements if you want to get from this point A to this point B. Now, if it doesn't matter to you, then it's a little bit different. But if you are to the point you want to set up goals and you want to get from A to B, then you need to know the most effective way to get there, and know that somebody's probably not going to be dragging you on their shirt tails. You got to buck up, pay attention, find the tools, and take the action and practice that adaptation. So I just think that it's wonderful that you're putting a program, a holistic program out that people, which is not to say, and I never say, I know I poke fun at being pill-pelted sometimes, but medication is necessary when medication is necessary. But I've always said that I don't believe that there's any one arrow in the quiver that's the panacea for all of us. There's a lot of tools out there, and we're all going to design our own toolkit with the things that help us maintain some amount of stability in our life, and the toolkit's going to change from time to time. And I think you bring up a good time when some of those tools might be changed or tweaked, and that's when some of these catastrophic events happen, because it isn't that the old tools aren't working anymore. It just might mean that you need an additional tool, or to pay a little closer attention to a couple of the tools you might have had for quite a while but have maybe been taken for granted, and now you're under the gun and it's time to pull those babies out and work them. And so I think that book just sounds fascinating, to hear the cases of 12 other people. And then the last two things, and I will let you go, is the second book you wrote, and then I'm just going to ask you where people can access these books if they want to. I have another site for you. Does Dr. Larry Schutz, PhD.com, have information on your books?
Yes, it does.
Good. I just put that in the chat. And again, for those folks listening, that's Larry S-C-H-U-T-Z, PhD. .com, and we'll go off over that again when Larry's off the air. But tell us about, I have a lot of veterans that listen to the show. I have a lot of veteran guests on my show. Your second book, Rehabilitation of the Shaken Soldier Syndrome. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. Veterans returning from combat theaters who've suffered blast injuries to the brain, and about half of them also have PTSD, face a gargantuan task in trying to readjust to life. PTSD, if anything, is more psychologically difficult than catastrophic reactions, and it's such a struggle to know what to expect out of yourself when you have this combination of brain problems and psychological symptoms. The military system also has an impossible problem on their hands because they have over 400,000 returning soldiers who are suffering from these problems, and military does not have qualified, trained, capable personnel or validated and tested programs for these disorders in place.
Right.
So what the military has done is to create a system of 5 regional acute rehabilitation centers around the country that provide very high-tech and impressive therapies, but only for the physical disabilities associated with these injuries and short-term recovery. And when the rubber really meets the road is in long-term recovery, and the military doesn't have a standard long-term recovery program. So instead, local VAs have to rely on a staff of people who are trained to practice traditional discipline treatments rather than the specialized cognitive rehabilitation and PTSD rehabilitation. And it's really an impossible situation for everyone. The clinicians, try as they might, simply don't have the training and the equipment and the programming necessary for this very difficult kind of therapy. The survivors are absolutely overwhelmed. The families are absolutely overwhelmed. And it's a situation that creates more casualties every year.
Yes.
So as difficult and I would say desperate as this situation is, to those of us who specialize in treating the brain injuries, we are especially up in arms about it because we have seen that the military is not pursuing the direction that's been successful in civilian medicine. They're ignoring the advances in civilian medicine that have helped us to get these problems under control. And so the book I wrote was my attempt to explain in relatively simple language how the VA and the Department of Defense, the military medicine system for soldiers who are still on active military duty, how they could take the resources they have and reorganize them essentially at no cost and provide the fully specialized care.
Wow. Amazing.
While it can be done, up to now, I'm not aware of any VA hospital that has accepted this charge and chosen to take up this direction. And so I've reached the point now where I'm advocating that veteran groups themselves take up this challenge and develop community-based brain injury support for one another.
You know, and I know that you have to go, but one night, because as I said, I do have a lot of veteran listeners, perhaps you'd like to come back sometime at your convenience and talk a little bit more about that book and the situation with veterans. We've come to know or find out that somewhere like 22 veterans a day are coming home and committing suicide, and we're losing more here after the fact than in the war theater, and I find that incredulous and heartbreaking and shocking. And obviously the VA's hospitals have been in the soup for a while, and really need some rehab themselves, no offense there, no pun intended, actually, I lied, pun intended, but I just think that that's so important, and I'm so happy that you wrote that book, and I'd like to do what we can do, even posts, and I'll look up on, I just found before we came on this other side of yours, and then I was going to ask you, and when you're off the air, I'm going to again go through the Give Back program, those websites, but I was very interested in both of these books and wanted to make sure that we knew where to access the books. So is that the best place, LarryShutesPhD.com, or is there another website or place that you'd...
Well, that's where you can get a summary of the material in the books.
Great.
And if you want to access the books themselves, they're relatively cheap, and you can get them through Amazon or through another online bookseller.
Great. And I'd assume that your website, like mine, says that. So if people can find their way to your website, you're going to say on your website where the book can be purchased.
Cross-linked.
Cross-linked. Yeah, you're so technical. Just a step. I'm a mouthpiece. But thank you for that technical insight that you gave me. But are there any parting things that you'd like to say? Usually I have some Q&A now, but I think what we're going to do, folks, is Larry and Maria was obviously exhausted and has a hell of a schedule coming up the next 48. Larry was kind enough. They're on East Coast time, obviously. I'm going to let him go, and then we can talk in open mic. I'm going to review these websites, a little bit about a short synopsis of what we've been talking about, give you the contact information, invite Dr. Schutz back anytime he would like to come, and then we'll do some discussion, and if any questions come out of that discussion, I'm sure Larry and Maria wouldn't mind me dropping them an email. So you guys hold tight. What I'm going to do is see if Larry has any closing comments, then I'll make a few, and then I'll give you a few-minute break with a song, and then we'll come back and do open discussion, open mic. So, Larry, it's really been a pleasure meeting you tonight and an honor to have you on the show. I really appreciate it. Is there any final thing that you'd like to leave us with before you go?
Yes, there is. My mentor, Dr. Igal Gross, who is now in Tel Aviv, and Igal, I hope you're listening tonight, was a tremendous inspiration to me and a source of really everything I do. Yeah?
Hello?
just a second, Kim. I'll be right back. Someone's knocking at my window.
The window? Who would
you
be knocking on
in?
The window?
There. Okay, Kim, the final thought is this. Dr. Gross taught me that there is no problem that people encounter due to brain injury to which there are not solutions. You just have to look for them.
Yes, well, I think that is a great thought, and I don't want to leave you with someone knocking on your window. Did Maria forget something?
Yeah, Maria, I have to let her back in, so I'm gonna say farewell for the moment, and I'll be back on the phone.
Yes, many blessings. Thank you so much. Okay. Larry, press 1 if you do come back. I'm sorry, that last comment, he might be coming back, but obviously I had a feeling poor Mario's running on 100 miles an hour and that it might have been a situation where she would be forgetting something. So God bless her. Glad Larry was there to open the window and make sure that she can get what she forgot. Isn't that the way that it always happens for us? You know, we're HALT, one of the acronyms I use, were one or more of hungry, angry, lonely, tired. We're maybe in a situation of the topic we spoke about tonight, which is catastrophic reaction. And you can get a free manual, which is really incredible, that goes through this STAR program of Dr. Schutz. And again, that is found at givebackorlando.com. First of all, I'm going to say his site again, LarrySchutzPhD.com. That's LarrySchutzPhD.com. And that is the best place to download the PDF of the free manual. Or you have a second choice, and that is, I'm sorry, Larry's site tells about his two books, a synopsis about the books, and where you can find those books. The information about the STAR program, and of which catastrophic reaction is part of, you can find... where was I? GiveBackOrlando.com, the best place for the PDF download, or GiveBackLA.com, which is the easier place to read it. And again, the first book is called Self-Therapy for Traumatic Brain Injury, Teaching Yourself to Prevent Brain-Injured Moments. And the second book is for family members or friends, helping your family to recover from brain injury. So these are absolutely free manuals that you can either listen to or download, hopefully as a new tool in your quiver that will help give you some further insight into how your brain might be functioning a little bit differently. And again, our thanks to who has become a regular contributor, Dr. Maria Romanis, previously, currently, and soon previously, a staff pathologist at the VA hospital in Kansas City, about to embark on a passion that she's had of getting back into the field of brain injury and helping raise awareness, advocacy, and progress in the area of brain injury. And she's joining the team by being part of the STAR program, learning this program and going from a more traditional approach to medicine into a more holistic approach of medicine, which she has found to be of great benefit for her after 29 years in isolation and lack of identity validation and going through the process time that we all go through. And so I'm very appreciative of them both being here as guests tonight. Did you get her in, Larry?
I did.
Great. Good. I'm so glad. Well, in any case, I wasn't sure whether you were going to have to be going, but I was really to the point where, unless you have anything to add, I just kind of recapped the things that we talked about, all of your contact websites. And again, it's a real pleasure meeting you, because after having Maria on maybe four times, for different parts of the program, I've gotten such positive feedback, and really had a cool rapport with her. I just love Maria to death, and she's made it very clear from the beginning that she, you're her mentor, and has been learning and progressing and coming into her new skin, evolving even more within your program. So it's a pleasure to get to meet you now, finally, after getting to hear about you. I'm really grateful that you came on tonight, and maybe my last, and then I'll give you another volley if you want. But for those of you who are looking at the program page, it scrolls through a lot of different pictures, and I told him when I first saw him that he looks like such a happy person, such a happy, calm, together person. He looks like someone that I think everyone would want to know. There isn't any pretense, any John T. Malloy look to put forth a certain persona. You're so genuine, and I don't know, pick up on this twinkle in your eye, this lightness of being. It all could be my brain injury. I don't know, but do you ever get challenged with these catastrophic events yourself?
Sure. My favorite learning experience about catastrophic reactions was when I was in eighth grade. I entered a speech writing contest, and I won at the local level, and then I won at the district level, and then I went to the big show to do my speech. And at the big show, you had to have it memorized. And so I stood there in front of an audience that included a couple of my old classroom teachers and my family, and I forgot my speech. And I stood there dumbfounded with my mouth hanging wide open. I couldn't think of a thing to say. And that's just not like...
Mm-hmm.
But there I was, publicly embarrassed in front of everybody with this catastrophic reaction. And afterward, I told myself, you got to get back up on the horse. So I seized the earliest opportunity to do public speaking, and it took about a year for me to get all the way past the collywobbles.
Wow. And so now, if those kind of things come up, there's an old saying, you know, about the mechanic who doesn't work on his car. Do you find yourself following your principles?
I'm really kind of stiff-necked about that. My attitude is, if I've got a procedure that I think somebody else should use, I make sure that I have it done to me first.
Good for
you. And there's
you.
Not a test I give that I didn't take before I knew the rules on how you score it. I want to know what I'm putting people through and make sure that it's worthwhile.
Excellent.
So I take my own medicine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, I just thought I'd rib you a little bit with that just to see. You know, every now and then it's easier for me, not you necessarily, but it's why I can tease, because, again, it's one of those mirroring things to me, is that I can give good sage advice sometimes and pearls of wisdom, good tools of recovery, and then forget them when I'm in a situation of my own every now and again. Not usually, or I wouldn't be here, you know, doing what I'm doing. But, you know, there are times where, you know, it's a challenge when you know. You know, it's one thing if you don't know, but if you know, you know, then it can be a little challenging, you know, to stay on your path, you know, as it were, because there's always looking for some, you know, something looking to knock us off our path, or that's going to catch us out of right field. And that's truly the time that we get a chance to work on the tools. You know, I talked about that earlier, and reading about them, studying about them, all of the head knowledge in the world isn't going to help. It's the experiential part of it and repetition, in my opinion, that is going to imprint these new coping skills inside a person where first thought might be wrong, might be first thought wrong in the beginning. It might be second, third thought wrong, but you can stop the reaction and respond. And I think eventually, you know, first thought wrong might be just brief and fleeting, not something that you have to dwell and think of, and some of these answers start coming automatically. And to me, that's such a huge message of hope and encouragement for people, that this is being done now, you know, and we've got people like you and Dr. Tucci out working on it, now Maria joining the team, but also being a wonderful success story. You know, if your book had 12 cases in it and she wasn't one of them, you got 13 at least going here, you know, that have really benefited from this program. And I really hope that the VA will, you know, wise up and take this suggestion on. But just like we as individuals have to be willing to take action ourselves and go out, find that help, demand that help, and then be committed and disciplined to that help, I think that that's probably true, you know, in these groups too. You know, they need to do that as well. And so when you talked about the veterans groups, maybe rather than the veterans hospitals, that's more of a grassroots personal place where people are going to probably be the ones taking it to the VA, not you. It's probably going to be, and I'd like to help and have any of the other hosts or guests that are listening that are willing to get this word out to the VA groups, VA groups, and we are connected to quite a few of them on Facebook, and quite a few listen to the show. And I'm all for going it that way, because it seems to me in traditional medicine, and a couple of my doctors have told me, I've brought them things that I've gotten from the show and come in with a list of questions I wouldn't have even known what to ask before, and they look at me vague. And I'm bringing information to them that is news to them, that they haven't gotten in their CECs or in their textbook. And so it's the patient bringing the information to the doctor for maybe one of the first times in history, because they're learning it this way and bringing some alternatives that just simply weren't available before. So I'm seeing it work in this community. I think in the veteran community, that's going to be probably your better shot, your path of least resistance, because there's less red tape and bureaucracy involved and more personal need and desire and desperation, whatever the motive, to find those solutions for the people that are willing to keep moving forward.
Actually, many of my former clients have taken up the task of educating their physicians.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they happen to have a doc who doesn't want to listen, they just get another doc. But it creates a great kind of teamwork if the doctor understands that he or she doesn't have the specialized knowledge and that the patient does.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
A curious thing happened with the VA system, Kim. This is something I still shake my head about. In 2008, the Rand Corporation published a book-length criticism of the military medicine system for how badly they've handled all these special needs. It's the most scathing criticism I've ever seen in print. And in 2009... the VA invited some of the very best of the best in the civilian brain injury specialty to attend a symposium. And so a bunch of the big daddies showed up, and they gave a wonderful presentation on the kinds of things that the military and the VA need to be doing. And after the conference, nothing was done with it. So
wow.
It's not a question of being able to tell the bureaucrats who run the system what needs to happen. They've already been told.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it does say that you absolutely can't look to them to implement it.
And so much
so
of...
It needs to be grassroots.
Yeah, I believe so, too. And so many times that's where it's gotta come from. So I think that that's a really great way to do it. And anything we can do here to promote that, anything you might be able to send me. You know, I'm also kind of funny. It's not funny, but one of my other interests is genealogy, and I happen to be a member of the Daughters of the American Revolution, DAR. And we've been off for the summer, and we meet the second Tuesday of every month, and so next Tuesday is going to be when we go back, you know, for the fall for our first meeting after being off in the summer. And, you know, we do a lot of things to help veterans, promote veteran programs, and I happen to be the public service director. And so it would be kind of neat to have something if our VA hospital isn't doing it. DAR has some access that I wouldn't have, you know what I mean, going in by myself, DAR goes down there regularly, and I could and would be included. Those people, my counterparts in the group, would gladly bring me along and are all on board on what I've been doing. And so there's a couple ways I might be able to help if you want to talk to me off air or send me anything or anything like that.
I'm very interested in that, Kim. I'm very interested. Somebody's
good.
Got to do something.
Agreed.
And you're in a good position to do it. I had a remarkable experience a couple of years ago of being able to make a contribution to a group of veterans as an outsider. The hospital at which I was working, Casa Colina Rehab Hospital in Southern California, got a grant to set up a special program for 10 families of veterans who had TBI and PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up a 5-day program at a beautiful natural vacation resort. And it was a combination of a wonderful recreational activity and a social activity and a teaching event for these families. And they all came in, and they all looked shell-shocked, and each family sat off by themselves in the big cafeteria space where we all met. And it was exactly kind of what you would expect in people who've been devastated by these disorders. And we just tried to get to know one another and to befriend one another and to open our hearts. And in a matter of about 2 or 3 days, the ice all melted. And we started talking person to person about what was going on. And it really opened the doors to help these folks to cope with what they're dealing with. It can be done. There's so much that can be done.
Well, and I was thinking of different people as you were talking, and we'll talk about it off the air, but I wouldn't mind re-mentioning these because all of these live shows are archived for on-demand listening. And so the link to this show you can use for promotional purposes anywhere that you would want someone hearing this message. But, you know, other guests I've had on, there's a woman named Jaspin Booth who founded a group called FinalSalute.org, and it's female veterans. 55,000 on any given day are homeless when they come back.
Oh.
And there's a lack of resources, and what Jaspin did is started a group, a huge group of sympathetic and working female veterans that help find housing and help that the VA isn't offering these women that are coming back. And several other groups, people I have on, veteran groups that have been, in fact, Dr. Bart Billings was on with Dr. Chris Ann Gordon a couple weeks ago, and I'll have to send you his bio. He might be somebody you'd want to connect with, because Dr. Gordon is about going down the same road in a way, you know, similar way as what you're going. But I can think of a number of people I've had as guests that already have veterans groups going that I think would be very interested in this approach. So, you know, not only the DAR connection, which is a national organization, but also some guests that have been on the show and our listeners, so many of whom are veterans and have not been happy or satisfied or felt help from the resources that they've been given through the veteran system. I know a couple brain injury survivors right now that are scared to death to go back to the Veterans Hospital to get treated, you know, and so they go in under emergency to the University Hospital, the level one trauma hospitals here, and just pray they'll get a referral away from the VA, You know what I mean? And it's because
Absolutely.
Of that. Their needs aren't being met there. So,
well, in the military culture, people attach a shame to admitting that you have
yes.
cognitive or emotional difficulties as a terrible
mm-hmm.
attitude.
Yes. Yes.
And
Absolutely.
And for another, if you go into a traditional system and you start just talking honestly about your symptoms, the corporate psychiatrists will definitely start writing you prescriptions.
Yes.
And if the key problem, and this is something Gross taught me, if the key problem that's holding people back from living full lives is the cognitive effects of the injury,
mm-hmm.
there isn't a medication on earth that can get you to think differently. That's not something medication is for.
No.
If you need to think differently, you are the only one who can do that.
Yeah, it's like programming a computer. A pill can't do that. That's a series of actions.
You got it.
You know, it's a process to reprogram the computer, and nothing that a pill can fix. Do you mind? I have somebody who's had their hand up for a while that would like to ask a question. Do you have time for that? And then
Sure.
I'm sorry, I keep bringing you. You said you had just a couple minutes. I want to respect your boundaries, but at the same time, the stuff that you're talking about is all very powerful that I feel passionate about. And, you know, my husband's a retired 20-year Air Force. I'm a DAR. My dad's a once a Marine, always a Marine. I'm very sympathetic, empathetic, want to be helpful, you know, not only to the brain injury community, but our veterans as well and as part of this community, because there's been a bridge in some ways. You know, the brain is the brain. A lot of the things that we suffer are the same. We all have our own story. But sometimes I see the group separated, even within the brain injury community, a TBI versus an ABI versus a brain cancer, a civilian versus a veteran. And, you know, we really need to come together on this, because recovery is a universal theme and the brain is a common organ. And so I guess I feel like we all have our story and our unique part, but what we have is to gain things from each other, not anything, I don't think, that's going to threaten each other or a one-up contest. It's a place where the power is in the numbers and how the word's getting out, and we've got the opportunity to be doing that right now. But if you'll answer a question here, Les Paul, you're on the line with Dr. Larry Schutz. This is Les Paul, and he happens to be our Tuesday night host.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. Hi. It's an awesome interview tonight. I'm glad to be – I've been in the background listening the whole time. I wish I could remember the question I was going to ask, because I've been typing away and forgot where I was at. Let me think. Let me see. I'm reading. Question was about something you said earlier. Let me see. I'm searching. I'm a brain injury survivor myself. About a survivor being their own therapist, and that's where peer support ties in with what we do so much. I'm a peer supporter and advocate in two local brain injury support groups, as well as Brain Injury Radio, and we have a very large military community in Augusta, Georgia, and we have Fort Gordon there, and I mean, many thousands of troops have passed through there. In fact, hundreds of thousands over a long period of time. And
my dad was posted there.
Really? Okay.
He worked with he worked with Douglas Aircraft Company. He was a civilian seconded to the military. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Augusta has a very high percentage of people coming through the southeast that go through the Fort Gordon. And there's also the Wounded Warrior Care Project, which I know people, there's a lady named Kinga Kiss Johnson that actually had a show briefly on Brain Injury Radio, but she's actually involved in the military in a way where she's actually speaking to the high-ups about the needs of the survivors and that are military. And she's in Washington, D.C. a lot of the times talking with them, saying, you just don't understand where the funding is going the wrong way, or they're not understanding how to properly provide it. And she's an awesome advocate. She actually came from another country to move to America. This wonderful woman is about 6'7". I love her to death. She worked with me for about 2 years, and then she was called to Washington, D.C. to represent the Wounded Warrior Care Project and several other military related things to go with the wars that are going on right now. And so there's the Wounded War Care Project would be an awesome thing for you to tie up with and see if you could even make it stronger. I mean, it sounds like you've got a lot of contacts. It's amazing what you've been talking about tonight. I just want to thank you for being here, and also Dr. I'm trying to say her name when she had to leave.
Maria.
Dr.
Maria.
I just love her. She's just down to earth. You know, I'm a multiple traumatic brain injury survivor. I never fought in a war, but it's like I had a battlefield in my brain when I had a brain aneurysm first and multiple brain injuries and followed by a second brain aneurysm. And so I'd like to see survivors in our communities. I don't know how you feel about this, and I'm not going to take long, but I've said this on here before many times, and a lot of times the military survivors and the civilian survivors are kept apart because there are many different types of injuries, and they have a different mindset a lot of the times. But where I work at a Center for Independent Living, which works with all people with disabilities, we've had a lot of military people come into my office and say, "Dear God, I wish I had a peer support group like this in the military," where they come to my local support group. And we've had several military survivors come in and say, "I've never had anything like this." And they've gone to big VA centers, and it's like a machine where they meet a young person that's had a brain injury saying, "Oh, my goodness, I didn't recognize this. I'm used to seeing someone with PTSD or concussion or something else, and then they find a young man who's had a concussion riding a dirt bike, and they've started working together and building teams and forgetting whether it's military or not, even though there are differences. And I just wonder what you think about bridging that gap in some level. I know you need to keep them separate in some ways in the military because it's different for military. They've seen a lot of battle and have been battle-hardened and see different things. But I have a real passion to see. I have a real passion to see. I know the warriors that didn't get to fight on the battlefield fight for you guys. You know, my dad was in the Navy. My brother Steve was in the Army. My brother Ed was in the Air Force. And I never got to serve. At 22, I had a brain aneurysm, and I never got to serve. And I would love to serve the way Kim is doing by spreading the good news and hope about these soldiers coming home that have done so much and are getting so little. And I'll stop there because I don't want to continue. And I know you're already staying beyond your time, but it's been awesome.
Thank you, Les, for those kind words. I think one of the limitations of the traditional medical approach is that it devotes so much attention to what's wrong with the person, as if somehow you can only be properly treated if you're being treated alongside of other people who have exactly the same thing wrong that you do.
Yes.
But recovery is not about what's wrong with you. Recovery is about adapting.
Yes.
And adaptation is something that we all have in common. And adapting to the effects of your injury is something that people can very easily share. Give Back as an organization has folks with strokes, it has folks with tumors, it has folks with aneurysms.
Now you know what I'm talking about. How often they recover
and
discovery.
And people work wonderfully well, shoulder to shoulder, when they talk about how they're trying to cope.
Yes.
Right.
So, yes,
and
I totally encourage that.
Yeah, and I do too. I was talking about, well, a different one last night, but 2 weeks ago on a veteran Facebook support page, it's a PTSD and brain injury, I posted a show and somebody countered back, and I actually do have a diagnosis of PTSD, and no, I didn't serve in the battle theater except in my own mind and in my own soul. And so that was my answer, and they have let me stay. But, you know, the automatic response was going to be that I was different and I was an interloper, you know, in their group when we don't get paid. We're volunteers here at Brain Injury Radio. We're a nonprofit organization that makes enough to keep us on air. We're here because we're purpose-driven and didn't get help for a long time, and we want to pay it forward, bring people like you forward, and help you. We want to be in this movement to help everybody, just like what you're doing on Give Back. So, again, I'm really grateful. And I'm in STRATCOM off at Air Force Base territory. So, So I thought of another group, too. There's I'll have to look. Waddell, and I can't think of her first name, and Dr. Orr, who was a host on our show, have a traveling seminar they take around called Hope for the Home Front, and it's actually for families of veterans coming home because they realized that this, you know, there was some help being given to the veterans coming home, but the families, nothing, you know, and
the need is so extreme. I heard Marilyn Lash give a wonderful presentation on what these families are up against, and it's chilling.
And Waddell does that with her, and Dr. Orr can't because he's become a caregiver now in his own home. His wife had an aneurysm, but I can't think of her first name, Ms. Waddell, and Dr. Orr wrote the book Hope for the Home Front, and Lash Publishing happens to sponsor my show, and that was how I got to meet them. But then the Brain Injury Association of Nebraska brought them here to do the weekend retreat Hope for the Home Front. So I'm also in close touch with Marilyn and the two that wrote the book and are very involved interactively going out all year long on these retreats. So anyway, I think we have a lot to talk about again down the road on air, but definitely off the air. So Maria's got all of my contact information, and again, you can write me at inaflash.org and be happy to talk anytime that's convenient. And again, so much appreciated that you were on the show tonight.
I would love to stay in contact with you, Kim, and I'd love to come back on the show again.
Great.
And I'd
all
love
right,
to hear you,
well,
so.
yeah. All right, well, you get some sleep, and thank you for spending the extra time with us tonight.
It really was a pleasure.
Thanks so much. Good night.
Good night.
Les, I put you on hold for 1 second. I want to take a moment to thank our Brain Injury Radio sponsor, TBI Survivor Network. I want to take the opportunity to thank my Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. Make sure to check them out at lapublishing.com. You'll see an entry that says Brain Injury Journey. That is their magazine that comes out 4 times a year. You can get it free. Can't beat the price. Tonight has been some huge, mongously valuable tools to survivors and their families that are all free. I'm going to run through those real quick. Back to Lash. When you go to Brain Injury Journey, that is their magazine, and you can sign up to get that magazine free online, and it looks, or you can pay for a hard copy subscription. The content is exactly the same. You're going to see some wonderful articles for veterans, civilians, survivors, and caregivers. So thanks to Lash Publishing as well. Again, this is Brain Injury Radio Network. I'm your Hump Night host, Kim Justice. And again, those resources, I just gave you Brain Injury Journey magazine from Lash Publishing, but tonight my guests were Dr. Maria Romanis and her mentor that just got off the line, Dr. Larry Schutz, and two free manuals that you can get. One, the first one is for survivors, titled Self-Therapy for Traumatic Brain Injury, Teaching Yourself to Prevent Brain-Injured Moments. The second is for family members or friends, called Helping Your Family to Recover from Brain Injury. And those can be found at the website givebackorlando.com. Again, that's givebackorlando.com. I guess that's the easier one to download the PDF of the manual from, and the easier one to read it, if you just want to do that on your computer, is givebackla.com. And both of those manuals are free resources I encourage you to look at in conjunction with whatever recovery tools you're using. There's always something compatible that'll give you just one more tool to think about. And again, his two books, Self-Therapy for Adaptive Recovery, STAR. That's what the entire program is about. Two books that he wrote, Head Injury Recovery in Real Life and Rehabilitation of the Shaken Soldier Syndrome that we were just discussing, can be found at the website larryschutzphd.com. I think that's my housekeeping for tonight, and I'm going to bring us back with open mic for the remainder of the show, which will just be about a half an hour, and I'll bring on anyone who would like to call in at this point. The phone number is 424-243-9540, or toll-free, I've lost the number. Okay, getting late for Kim too, right? Toll-free, that number is 855-473-3711. And outside the U.S., 202-559-7907. At this point, I will be taking callers in just a few minutes. And so if you do have any questions or comments and want to call in, make sure to push 1, and I'll be happy to bring you online for the remainder of the show. You know, what I was thinking of, we ended talking about veterans, and I usually do this when I have a veteran guest on, but we think about the people in our day-to-day life, whether they're in our peer support group or whether they're people like Dr. Maria and Dr. Schutz who came on tonight, anybody who helps us by holding the lantern on our path of recovery, I think this song will go out to tonight, and this is Chris Dukes with Heroes, something we may take 4 minutes to reflect on, the heroes in our life that have really made a difference from us stopping dead in our tracks and going backwards or making the choice to take the action to move forward.
Cold. My hero, and always. whole. This is home. I swear we'll all be waiting on you.
That goes out to our heroes tonight from Chris Duke's band.com, or you can find him at facebook.com/Chris Dukes Band. He's one of our great indies from Albany. And since I mentioned I was from Offutt Stratcom territory, and I opened the show with Happy Hump Night from somewhere in Middle America, my regular listeners are used to me doing this, and no, I only have the 55 seconds. But people say, now, I've heard of Stratcom. Where is that anyway? And this is sometimes how I answer. Yeah, and that's technically, they call it Bellevue, but kind of a burb, another city abutting Omaha, Nebraska. It's where you find Offutt and Stratcom. In fact, on 9/11, it was one of the places that the president flew to, and I was much dismayed as I sat terrified in my chair for about 3 days watching that news, that the media would tell the terrorist where the president was coming. Thanks, media. Appreciate that. In any case, heroes in our life, and I know that there are a couple pivotal people in my life that helped bring me out of a mire, which I'm still at risk to rediscover or to get back into periodically. But they're people who gave me some fundamentals up front to help me help myself. And I think that's what Dr. Larry and Dr. Maria were talking about, is we all wish, and especially when we're desperate, isolated, we wish there was someone, or as I like to quote, always wrong, I think, is anybody out there? Can anybody hear me? And that feeling in our soul, those are moments, very real moments for survivors and caregivers, I think. And maybe ordinary people have those moments where they're just like a little rat in the maze and they have hit the wall alone, and it echoed, and it's dark. And is anyone noticing? But the thing that saves some of us from staying there is that suddenly somebody comes up by us with a lantern and says, let me help you find your way out. And then it's our responsibility to take their advice and to take the action they recommend, which is to follow them. Watch carefully, be careful, and follow them. along the path of recovery. With that, I'm going to let on Les Paul. You're back on the air with me.
Hello. You've done a wonderful job tonight, as you always do. Very good guests and everything. And I know Maria had to leave abruptly, but the show must go on.
She was here almost an hour and a half, but what I was picking up on is, and interestingly that we'd have this topic, is just that it was already stressful in a good way, to leave home, to go on a plane, even simple things like that for a lot of us, to leave home, to get out of that circle, that compass we used to have. You are here, boom, and you draw a circle around it. And I think sometimes our circle gets smaller after a brain injury. And so to be going from Kansas to Florida and meet one person, very familiar, kind and loving to her, and the other that she was just getting a feel for in person about the prospect of completely changing her life, moving, job, all of those top stressors, on the shrink scale that cause you issues. And if you've got a brain injury on top of that, then these catastrophic responses, she was then something new in the middle of something taxing happened when out of left field, as often happens when I talk about in my intro, life on life's terms, these are the things I'm talking about, is when she unexpectedly had a relative die, which totally changed and uprooted the plan and the plans that she had made. And I think when she line listed that and had just talked about how important sleep is to recovery, and she was getting up early tomorrow and all the driving, all the exhausting things she's going to have to do, and then still function. Yeah, when she gets to the funeral finally, is going to have to, after all that exhausting travel and change of plans and that burdening, is still going to have to function in the face of a relative she hasn't seen for a while for a somber moment. Now, that's a lot. And I think when she said it out loud, suddenly it was like, she had been here an hour and a half. It's 11:30 on the East Coast. She had an hour drive to get back to her hotel. And I think that might have been the very tip of the topic we were talking about. Inadvertently, but realistically, because that's how it happens for us. If we got a lot of warning to plan ahead, it wouldn't be a problem. It's getting armed ahead of time so that when life on life's terms slaps us in the face, we get knocked down from time to time, but we're able to have the tools to help us get back up and get through the situation with as much grace as possible, knowing that life is static. Things are always going to change, whatever this catastrophic event is today, we're probably not going to remember it several days from now, for one. That's a blessing.
Yeah.
She didn't mention the sense of humor and the fact that we'll forget is being blessings. I'm going to have to talk to Dr. Larry about adding those to the STAR curriculum, I think. But in any case, I think she was just realizing she had a lot ahead of her over the next several days and had to go. And I'm happy she could stay with us for an hour and a half. And in addition to that, Dr. Larry said that he could just stay for a couple minutes when Maria left and wound up staying longer. And so
a lot longer.
A lot longer. And I'm really glad for that, because I was interested in his books, not only the work he's doing with Maria and the STAR program, but his past experience, in his career that has led him to this point. And I had read a blurb on that website about the 12 real life stories of following people through their brain injury and the roads they wind up taking, the tools they wind up acquiring, and it's really stories of the of those people's process. And we all have a process. And, you know, in the beginning, after my brain injury, I think I wanted recovery to be an event. Okay, this happened. I was in a coma. They did this brain surgery. I'm back here. I just want to resume what I was doing before. You know, like this thing didn't happen. And, you know, just move forward. And I want it to be in a destination, an immediate gratification destination, when the hard truth of it is that it's actually a process that takes some amount of time, where we're going to learn to work on things like impatience, frustration, anger, depression, kind of, if you picture a color wheel and put emotions in there instead, an emotion wheel, those are going to be opportunities we did not ask for or want, but they're going to be situations that if we pick up the baton are going to allow us to get mastery, you talked about last night, over the tools, and just make that kind of progress. Sorry, it was something shiny, and I lost the last the last little inks of what I had to say. But yeah, you were following. So I see we have another caller who's been in for quite a while, but doesn't have their hand up. Last night, I think it was the night before. One of the nights, I threatened one of you with, you don't want to pick somebody whose hand's not up because you might regret what you hear on the other end of the line. So I really hesitate to do that, but
Get trigger happy now.
Yeah, I know. I might. We only got about 10 minutes left, and so, you know, I can either quickly have my hand next to the mute or just have the person who's online I say go for it. Live dangerously. We've had a good show tonight. And the least that person could have would be a catastrophic reaction, which now he'll be armed with the tools to help him deal with that tomorrow. So
yeah.
Area code 509. Have we got an anniversary coming up?
So we do AK-47. That's the answer.
Oh,
that'll get people to pay attention.
There you go. So wait, there was one thing. I'm sorry. Before the show ends, before my show on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month is Lori Fatel. She does The Science of Happiness, a wonderful show I encourage you to listen in on. But on the first and third Wednesday of each month before my program is Shaken Not Stirred with host Dr. Robert Couvant, who has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease a couple years ago. Did I say Shaken Not Stirred? Yes. I saw a post yesterday on Facebook, and I'd like us, if it's our inclination, to send up prayers. He's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and was going to be having surgery today. And I wasn't aware of that. I read it on a post last night. And so he's one of our own. Send up a warm thought and a prayer for his successful surgery and recovery.
Yes, yes.
Yes. So, is there anything?
I have kids in the background, as you can hear. TVs are going, and
you just like making a lot of noise, don't you?
Yeah, this is pretty quiet for how it can be.
Probably because of school today. I saw the pictures about school today, so they might be a little shell shocked themselves or worn out from first day of school.
But that was just my one daughter. My other daughter don't start till the What's your first day, Lex? Yeah, 23rd, it's her first day.
Yes, but you were stalking your daughter today with the camera. I could see the look on her face.
I had to pay
Cut
her seven
out,
bucks.
Dad.
I had to pay her $7 to get the pictures I got.
Oh boy, I wish I could.
But I wanted
some
good pictures of her first day.
Now
so
that's
it was worth
her
the $7,
daughter, isn't it? Les, isn't that her father's daughter?
Yes.
How much did I owe you? $2?
That's hilarious.
How much? Three. Oh, okay. How much is that total?
I had something good happen, Kim, today.
What
Very
is
good.
It?
Very good. You know the Earth Calm device I've been talking so much about?
Yes.
Well, Jean Gallic, that's her name, the one that sent the thing to me, that she's the inventor of it. She called me today and we had a long conversation. And she's going to be on my show in less than 2 weeks.
Super.
So she called me. We had a long conversation today, and she talked about how she invented it and how she worked on it for so long because of how magnetic fields were interfering with her, and there had to be something out there to help her from her chronic health problems. And so she was the inventor of it. And it goes in great deal talking about it on her website, and she sent me a lot of information today. Just thought I'd share that with you.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. Thank you. What good news.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I was hoping that she was going to be on because you've really had favorable reports about this equipment. I think that's going to be a fantastic interview.
I haven't had one at all today. It's so weird. I don't understand it. It blows my mind. I normally have a severe one every day at some point, several times.
Yeah, she should send them to all the hosts, and she'll get a study on hosts.
Yeah, that's what I thought. He really lucked out, man. But it's going to be a fascinating story because it's been a topic that we've talked a lot about, and so they're offering a mitigating help, you know, with this problem. Yeah. I'm not going to say they can eliminate it, but certainly something that would improve the situation and help protect us. And I'll be really looking forward to that interview. So everyone make sure you should be listening to Les' show, Dreamcatcher, on Tuesday night anyway, of course, but be looking for his post about that show coming up in the next couple weeks. It ought to be really interesting.
Do you know when what it's going to be, Les?
Say it again.
What date it is?
Tuesday after this one coming.
Okay.
Like two days short of 2 weeks from now.
A week from Tuesday.
Day after the anniversary show.
Yes.
Far
out. That'd be the 16th, I think.
Huh?
I think it's the 16th.
Yeah. And the 15th, make sure to tune in for our fourth anniversary show, which is going to be done in parts, but that's the actual fourth anniversary. So Craig, I know, has been working on that a little since he started it. Hard to believe we've been around, well, some of us haven't, but hard to believe you've been around for 4 years, Craig. Some of us have only been around for a couple.
I'm trying to get some of our original hosts that were from the beginning now. So I think we'll have some of our original from our expansion I'm hoping we can get Ashok on and Lee Carlton.
Me too. Me too. Nicole and Lee, I think, would be really good. I've heard some of their shows, so that'll be a really wonderful show. And remember, if you can't make it live, folks, all of these live shows are archived for future on-demand listening. Obviously, you can't ask the questions and do the interactive part, but the shows are all intact. And try to be there for the live celebration. That would be very awesome. And speaking of celebration, before I get off the air tonight, because I am coming up on a couple minutes before midnight my time. It's already happened Les's time. And in a couple hours, Craig, your time. My parents will be celebrating their 56th wedding anniversary. And we were out to dinner the other night for my dad's birthday on the 30th, and I was joking. Obviously, I've known them like most of their marriage. And I said, gee, I don't know whether to send you guys a congratulations card or a sympathy card. Ha ha. So I'm kind of in the doghouse. And but that is an incredible accomplishment. I think we can all agree to be able to spend 56 years with the same person, with the ups and downs inherent in any relationship, and have the amount of commitment it takes to work it through to the other side. So congratulations to my parents. And today, which I still have 5 minutes left of, was one of my four dogs, the baby, Libby's second birthday. So if any of you are into looking at funny pet pictures of a doggy birthday party with all four in their party hats, they are posted on my timeline tonight. So be sure to check out Libby's birthday for a laugh. And looks like we've got about 4 minutes left. So thank you guys for being on. I'm going to slowly mute you and going to end, so the people out there are going to be cut off. And, gee, I guess I could have gone longer since Dr. Couvent wasn't on. You guys should have scheduled a second show. This show was so much about our guest and our topic without the usual amount of second half of the show we have. I think I'll keep the integrity of the interview for them to use for their promotional purposes, which is also good for Brain Injury Radio. So I'm going to leave us tonight with something I believe we all have. And certainly when I was going through my brain injury, I was single at the time and had to rely on some of these. Then, through my ordeal and my recovery and my life today, I'm going to close the show in my usual way with Leah West and Guardian Angel. Good night. Thank you for listening. And God bless you, everybody. We'll see you next week with another fantabulous guest. Your host, Kim Justice, Brain Injury Radio Network.
Little baby up in heaven, says to God, do I really have to go? And God replies, yes, it's your time to leave.
door.